Let us open with a prayer, please. Most gracious God, on this day you've given us, we pray that we may open it with faith and hope and love as we share together as disciples of Jesus Christ through this congregation. In his name we pray. Amen. I really changed the topic. I want to talk about the LSU football game yesterday. So, that's I do advertise with my purple and gold. Now, I've written this out, and just to share with you a few thoughts, and then we'll have time for questions as you might have. My first official day here at Westminster was April 1st. And maybe to emphasize to this Southern boy that it was April Fool's Day, it snowed. Now, I don't know whether that was an April Fool's prank on God's behalf or a vivid reminder that in the interim ministry we need to expect the unexpected. And I think I'll take the latter, to expect the unexpected. That's the nature of this ministry. I serve as interim pastor between pastors. And some within the larger church are wanting to change the name, saying we need to call it transitional minister. That is the transition between pastors, and yet all ministers are in transition in that way. But it is about the transition from one chapter in a church's life to another. The way I look at it, if you look at a book, most books, at the end of a chapter, there's that blank space at the end of one chapter, and then on the next page, chapter two. I'm that blank space that moves you forward. But whatever this ministry might be called, it refers to change, and in that change, to expect the unexpected. Or to say it another way, ministry is about people, and no two people are alike. And in the same way, churches, no two churches are alike. And as you might know, I served four churches, 26 years in install ministry, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, and Virginia, and then 14 and a half, 15 years interim ministry, and this is my eighth church with that, eighth church in serving interim ministry. And my first few months here at Westminster were spent looking and listening just to discover what this church, the people here are like. I met with all 27 of the elders and the clerk of session. I've met with all the staff. I've visited with many of you, some for particular conversations and some in informal settings. And my intent has been to listen to as many people as possible, asking them to simply tell me what's been happening at Westminster Presbyterian Church. What's it like to be here? And I've heard their concerns, your concerns, complaints, criticisms, hopes, dreams. And as you can imagine, many of the conversations included the Dave Ryder situation. Some shared their anger and frustration, others a sense of disappointment or despair with the church. But most, in one way or another, were asking or have been asking, where do we go from here? How do we get there? Can we do it? Along with the listening, I've been looking at how things are done, watching the financial numbers, watching how people relate and respond to one another, watching myself as a newcomer to this church. Excuse me. And I want to say that this is not a detailed or inclusive description of Westminster Presbyterian Church, nor am I singling out any one person or group. These are general observations from 7 months serving as interim pastor. And I want to summarize what I'm going to say under three categories: connections and communication and clarity and connections. This congregation experienced a great disconnect about this time last year. That is, when Dave Ryder was arrested, and as the impact of his embezzlement was determined, connections were affected at all levels of church life. This disconnect was experienced in staff relationships, staff-to-leader relationships, staff-to-member, member-to-member relationships, member-to-leader relationships. And there was an undercurrent of this. There was a disconnect with this church's history and its reputation to the community, with community mission relationships, and trusting relationships throughout were frayed. I heard the questions, and maybe you were the one, maybe you asked them. How did it happen? Who was responsible? Where was the oversight? What are we doing now? My question in all of this was if there was going to remain, would be a disconnect from those trusting and supporting relationships to cynical and suspicious relationships. That is, money can be replaced, or you can even do with less. But this church was founded on, built on, and will grow on those relationships of trust and support. That's one area of connections that I believe is critical. Another area of connections is the fact that Westminster has at least three congregations loosely connected by worship. But there is a disconnect of fellowship and simply knowing other people in the congregation. This is not just for Sunday worship, but it includes adult Sunday school, children's Sunday school, the youth groups on Wednesday night, our family dinners, our small group to which we might belong. Now, this is normal in large congregations, but there needs to be intentional strategies to overcome this disconnect within a large church. Because what happens is we tend to look at the church within the walls of our worship service or our group, or believe that a pastor needs to lead the group. We are disconnected with all others who call Westminster their church home, or others who can provide leadership. It's easy to begin thinking in terms of them versus us, however we see ourselves, for how we do ministry, what is needed for doing ministry, caring for one another, serving in mission. We define it by what we see of those people we're with. Remember, we're not all alike. And how we work at being connected is a crucial piece for this church moving forward. And that leads to communication. This disconnect with the financial situation did not start within the last year or so. It's been going on for many years. We know that. But this disconnect with the financial situation was sustained by what I would say was a cloudy communication system. That is, staff and members were kept in the haze of being put off when asking questions about budgets and monies. As I've said earlier, there was a complicity of complacency in accepting Dave's rebuffs and runarounds. And not just for the finances, and not just with Dave. There was a focus on communicating efficiency at the expense of effectiveness that shrouded the reality of what was really happening. Let me say it this way. I've heard it said often when reports are given and other situations as a summary statement, all is well. That's efficient. But the problem is, as I see it, that all is not defined. You have to be part of the group behind that to know what it means. Not everyone knows what is included in all. And well, what are the standards of wellness for that ministry, mission, when we say it's well? Is it a condition to which we all have agreed and understand? In other words, how do we know when we've accomplished what we want to accomplish and what it takes to get there? The key word is we, all together connected by clear communications. And that leads to clarity. The disconnect and discommunication feeds or fed a lack of clarity for mission and ministry. And this is not a matter of having a mission statement and having it printed on the bulletin. It's a matter of having an answer when people ask, why should I be a member of Westminster Presbyterian Church? And as a member, how can I serve? Where can I serve? What can I do that gives me the joy of serving Jesus Christ through this congregation? The question is who this church is as you move into the year 2020. The answer must be clear. as it connects the as it connects this congregation to one another and its mission, and as it communicates and answers to and communicates that answer to the community, including inside these doors and to the world outside and to the next pastor. And so what's next? One, simply said, we will be moving forward. I have found the leaders of Westminster to be dedicated and committed. Soon we will elect new officers and there will be specific training for them. And I expect no less from them than commitment and dedication. And the officer retreat in January will look at how we are structured and resourced to do mission and ministry and preparing not only for a new minister, but also for mission and ministry as we move further into the 21st century. And this is to understand that in a few years, you're going to be entering the second quarter of the 21st century. And to the staff you have is highly skilled and gifted. I appreciate their perseverance as they have worked together during this past year under very difficult circumstances. I do think that communication among staff and their cohesiveness as a team in ministry is an area that we all want to continue to improve. And three, I've said this before and I'm going to say it again, what happened with the embezzlement does not define this church. What defines this church is how you respond. That will set the tone of the conversation the pastor nominating committee will have with any candidate. I do sense an energy among the congregation for moving forward, acknowledging that things can be better. Worship attendance, stewardship and financial commitments, family and children in worship and Sunday school, participation in mission activities and projects, support and nurture and care of all members, being intentional and welcoming the visitor. That's my short list. Four, we have to deal with our IRS obligations. And we have to fund our ministries for 2020. Plans are being made for both. We will have a balanced budget. And how that all works out depends on how you respond with your financial commitments. The math is simple. The decisions are difficult. And finally, this church has the resources to do whatever it wants to do. I'm convinced of that. I'm talking about your money, about your faith, about how you support one another, because we're all in this together. And having said that, I want to conclude by saying I am glad to be here. Yes, I expect the unexpected. I have a cartoon of a preacher headed into the pulpit, and he has this little thought bubble. I feel a spiritual crisis coming on. If I just had a sign to ease my doubts, and he looks up to God, a sign to buoy my faith, if I just had a sign. And in the next to last panel, there's a zap of lightning, a thunderous cloud, and then in the last panel, the preacher is seen holding a no parking traffic sign. He says, I don't know what it means, but I think I feel better. Such is the sign for our journey over the next several months. It's the ongoing challenge of ministry to expect the unexpected. But it's also the daily decisions of discipleship and the practical steps of service in the name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Thank you. Now I'm open for questions, comments. We got a lot of time. Or I can talk about LSU football game and what's coming up next week. That's anything for me.
How about the Tigers?
Yeah. Hopes and I guess I can make the analogy. For 8 years, LSU lost to Alabama bad. So for this congregation to say, you've lost some stuff bad, but there's hope. And maybe this church, I don't want to put it this way, maybe this church and its pastor can find, if you know football, the quarterback's name is Joe Burrow from Ohio. Maybe this church and its pastor can find a Joe or Josephine Burrow to do the same for you, which would be good. Anything else? I'm Doug.
Would you tell us about us? You're a new face. You're making first impressions. Can you help us understand who we are in your eyes and what perhaps are outstanding characteristics and maybe a few things that you find to be
I do come in as a visitor to look. And it's one of the first things I notice. And this, again, most of this is for most churches. This is just how we are as groups. If we're on the inside, we know things. It's allowing other people who come from the outside. How do we make them feel welcome? One of the first things I noticed was that the Lord's Prayer, it's now being printed in the bulletin. If you know it, that's fine. But if you come, if you visit from outside the Presbyterian faith or tradition, you don't know that Lord's Prayer. And you might, maybe you've grown up in church and you know it, but then we come to debt, and you have everybody else saying trespasses or sins or whatever. That's just a very simple thing. But I think it's indicative of a lot of what we do. We know, and it's being sensitive to those who are coming in, who are visitors, as you would do with any new person or visitor to your home. You would tell, as they looked around the room, you might say, "Don't sit there, that's grandma's chair and it's going to break." It's that kind of thing. If my family knows that, but if I'm not, I don't know. It's a simple matter of hospitality that I would encourage you to build on of how do you treat the stranger, and in that it's realizing that there are people who are members of the church who are strangers to you. I know that we. And I'll use worship. You sit in the same place most every Sunday. I'm very aware. And people say, you know, I've heard the whole thing. You know, we need to switch sides. Well, what is that going to do? If I switch you over here, you're still going to be sitting next to the same person. It's just over here. So that makes no sense to me. It's a matter. But I do appreciate it because I look out and I know. Chip, if I can name you by name, I know when Chip's not here because he sits right back there. That's nice to know. I mark it on my list and say, okay. We know. It helps to understand that. But it's a matter of taking some time outside of worship or during work to go to somebody who you don't know or might be in the area, especially during that welcoming time. That we have to go to somebody and say, "I'm Chip. I'm Gwen. Or you know, I've been a member here for 20 years." And they say, "Oh, well, I've been a member for 50." Well, wonderful. That's great. Now we have some names, and even I think part of it. And again, this is true for all churches. We're embarrassed to forget names. I've learned to be able to say, "I know you've told me. Tell me again." You know, it's slipped. There are so many doggone Doug, Daves, and Bobs in this church, it kills me. I will say that. That's confused me for a little bit. And I guess that's just a way of understanding it. And going with that hospital, it's there. I think in terms of wanting to increase the hospitality of the church, I sense of who you are, you're very stable. Congregation, and I will say I think that's part of the issue with the Dave Ryder. It really turned things upside down from everything that this church had ever believed, understood, seen as who it is, to have something like this happen. And so trying to gather that back together as to be, from what I understand, from looking at histories, reading other things of what's going on, of giving. It's a very generous church. That's why I really, what we do for the 2020 pledge, the stewardship campaign is going to go a long way with what happens And as we make plans, and plans are being made to deal with the IRS, that does not upset or change. We know there are going to be difficult decisions to be made. But what I found, too, as to who you are in most places, are people who can speak together honestly and with humility. It's those who come across, and this again, across the board, to come across to say, I know it all. I've not seen that, and I hope that doesn't happen, but this is to say, what do you think? You know, these are my thoughts. And again, within the Presbyterian system, it's a matter of leadership discerning together. I know many of you have been elders. The issue for, and this is part of having a particular training for elders and deacons, and I will be doing it for elders, that you don't represent, elders don't represent a constituency. We don't elect a female to represent females and older or younger. The elders come together to discern the mind of Christ. And that's their role. And we discern it because none of us know it all. Neither I'm not the bishop or high priest of this church to say, this is how. Again, sometimes things are done in terms of efficiency rather than as we talk together about it and share and are transparent in communication. I think that's part of, again, the being transparent in communications. That's one area that I think this church has been missing somewhat of what needs to be transmitted, letting people know, if you will, the pledge card that came out with the letter, if you got, I hope you got that, that had the budget on the back that compared. Nothing's being hidden. This is what people are asking for, within of saying this is what we need to be able to do ministry. And then on the back of the pledge card, the ranges of giving within this congregation. This is it. I mean, to let you know this is who we are. And again, it's not meant in terms of judgment or criticism. It simply is we have the information. And I think that's part of, again, what I said in here of connections that we are communication connections that we get with involved with our own little group and think because we know it, everybody knows it. And that's simply not true. So really wanting to work on that. I think this church takes great pride, rightfully so, in who it is and its history. And I think that's a good thing, and wanting to build for that and really looking at you know, with the pastor nominating committee moving forward, the ministry information form is soon to be online or should be already, and so resumes will be received. Carolyn's on the committee, and Maureen's on the committee. This is just my observation. If y'all start looking at resumes from Thanksgiving to Christmas, you really don't have a life. But that's just a fact of ministerial life. I know that. So that's, but they'll begin looking at plenty of resumes and filtering it down. And I think as you read it, it should be posted on our website to go to say this is who we are as a church. And I think it says it very well. So that that's kind of as a piece of who you are. I'll say there are a lot more young families in this church than you really see. Again, that's part of the disconnect, is that right now they're all at the bridge. And it's easy to come to see, think, well, we're the, you know, good Lord, how old a congregation we are. I had one gentleman in a church I served that very generous, very just wonderful man. He helped lead the facility addition to this church, like adding the rock. And he came to the 8:30 service. That was, and I'm not trying to, it looked like you. And one day he came to the 11 o'clock service, and he says, where in the, did all these kids come from? They only had two services, 8:30 and 11. And it really, to be honest, it made him more generous. He says, I didn't know we had this. I really didn't. And so that's part of, I think investigating, going to different ways to see some things, not just getting stuck, getting to know some people. How is it? And the bridge might not be your cup of tea. Getting up at 8:30 here at 8:30 in the morning is, I'm paid to be here at 8:30. I can tell you that. But but to get to know however you can for other people. I think that's what I said earlier, the intentional strategies of how we get people together and a congregation that needs to be adventurous enough to get out there and meet other people. That's rather than simply, this feeds me. I had the good fortune of sitting next to Lou Holtz after the first town hall, Town South meeting. And I got to talk to him about football. And he asked me, though, what did I see as the greatest problem within the church? And I thought it was very interesting. I told him it was the same as what I'd seen or what he had spoken about in terms of football, of team. That it's what the problem I've seen in the past 20 years or so, not when I started out 40 years ago, but in the last 20 years at least, is the Christian church culture begins to think in terms of my church and what I get. And if I don't get what I want, I'm going someplace else. That's what I've seen, rather than this is my church, this is ours. I'm here to help and do what I can. And I have a part to play, and I know that. And so I found that to be, it's sort of like, I think I've told the story of, I told the story before of people who've been faithful to a restaurant for 30 years, every Friday night, and then all of a sudden something goes wrong, and they stop coming. Rather than, hey, bad things happen. It doesn't always go your way, but it's not my church. It's ours. And that's been the difference I've seen in 20 years in terms of a congregation. And I would say this is just my sense of, well, Nicholas Kristof had an article about a few weeks ago in the New York Times, one of his editorials, about his observations of why people are, young adults are not coming to the church. He says what they hear is judgment. That's the picture they get. I know that's not true for most mainline churches. I know we've been through that fight within the denomination. Methodists are dealing with it right now. But for most, that's not the way it is. But that's the picture they have. And I believe that most young adults are looking for a place, one, to belong, to have a friend, and to be able to make a difference in their world. I really believe that, and I think the more a church, and I would say that rather than, if anything, I don't want to say this, and I don't mean this negatively, I know this church has a great history, but the focus really needs to be where are we going, and I do like what the Communications Commission, if you saw the video that was put together, the little tag of finding your place, your passion, your peace. It's not to say, we have your place, we have your passion, we have your peace. It's you come here and find it. That's focused on that. And I would urge you to continue to be focused on what people can find here. That's easy.
I have a question. My question, I think, relates to this conversation of welcoming others, inclusiveness. Jim Gilchrist, a number of years ago, led us through a very difficult task of sorting out same-sex marriage. And I think as a result, we felt a lot of pride that we could agree and disagree and be agreeable with each other and we came to a conclusion that we felt good about. So my question is, I guess it's along those lines, like your experience with that issue in the South, there's regional differences. It sounds like what you're saying is sort of for the next quarter century, something, you know, for the future we need to think about. And during the perspectives class, you shared a story about the impact of your grandfather and the issue of lovableness. And I think that all kind of comes together with what we're talking about. How it creates a Christ-like view and our view of
life. I think that's it. The church has gone through. And I would say that the history of the Presbyterian denomination in the U.S. since 1706, when it first Presbyterian, has always been questions of who's in, who's out. on ordination, from that we can start here with same-sex marriage, race, gender, and it goes back to how you were brought into the church. I mean, back in the early days, 1700s, revivalism. Were you brought into the church in a revivalist mode, or did you go through the traditionalist way? I mean, it's always been who's in, who's out. I think we're past a lot of that, thank God. And I know when I came in 40 years ago, the question before the church, and it was a seriously, heavily debated, can baptized children who are not members of the church take communion? How many of you grew up Presbyterians and the only way you could take communion was after you turned 11 and joined the church? And it was dumb. I mean, so there's always been fights about that. Having said that, I think when a church is able to move through that, as one minister told me, we can disagree without, I mean, one elder that I learned a lot from years ago, we can disagree without being disagreeable. How do we do that? And that's hard in our culture today. It used to be not so difficult. Presbyterians were noted for being able to disagree without being disagreeable. And then all hell broke loose. I'm sad to say, sorry to say, not just with politics, just within the denomination. The anger, there's a lot of stuff there. Political fights are tough. But if you've ever been through a real church fight, I'd rather be political any day. they're mean people. And that's one church advisor. This is more you want to know, but he's a church expert. He says, the church is the last place where people can be mean without being held accountable. And that's sad. Now, this was said 15, 20 years ago. But having said that, I think that's the piece of, how do we do this? Louise has, within this congregation, and I would say one of the places that I find, I would love to see, my personal opinion, I think if we could get some adult Sunday school classes some way that meet with, you know, have the bridge make it available if those folks are interested, who attend the 9:45, adult Sunday school classes that do not require a pastor to be present. I've heard this for a lot of things, that we need a pastor to lead us. Friends, my education, I know where to look it up. You don't. That's the difference between you and me. You know, we have stuff. You know stuff. You're part of that. The Presbyterian system is based on shared leadership. I would like to see more of that. Opportunities given for people to get together so we get to be with people who are not necessarily our age group, our gender, our thought process, whatever it may be, but we're focused on coming together to share this and share it openly and honestly. And as I said, and my three H's are honesty, humility, and humor. That I think being honest with ourselves leads to humility, because hey, this is what you get, which is the humorous part of it. I mean, as I've said before, it's part of one of my sermons. God's sense of humor shows up every morning when I look in the mirror. You know, and so that's where I am. But I think that's the more opportunities we give for that. The other side of that is taking advantage of those opportunities. I think some of those are there, but do we take advantage of them? Chip.
As being one who is guilty of sitting in the same seat for 30 years, you know, the thought came to mind here, one way to really shake this up, and along the theme we're talking about, is one Sunday we ought to just combine all three services, 10 o'clock, the 8:30, the 10, 9:45, and the 11 o'clock to come, and it's in fellowship hall, and along the theme you're talking about, give the sermon, or give the talk you just gave when we started. That would, I think, cause a lot of us to...
The churches...
Yeah. Like a gathering where we do meet the
other... Some churches on their annual congregational meeting, when it's to present the reports, will do that. And what they do is to have, whether it's two services or whatever, have one service that discombobulates everybody, you know, sort of thing. Like you say, maybe 10 o'clock, and then they have lunch. You know, afterwards to stay and you do some things like that. Again, I think it's trying to be intentional to think about that. How can we get to know other people, and what makes this your church? When I say three congregations, you also have a congregation that's the rock. People who are not part of this congregation and might not even be part of any congregation, but this is their church because we provide that ministry and mission to this community. But there are different ways to do it. And I don't want to belabor the point, but I think with the Dave Ryder situation made this particular transition, that's the piece of this transition that we've got that we're having to deal with right now. I plan sermons out. I'm already working on the end of January. That's the way Christmas, Advent is basically done. I started this 35 years ago, that Sundays come every Sunday. I've never been an associate, so I have preached every Sunday. And for some ungodly reason, worship happens. No, who go figure. But I learned years ago that I better start planning out so that where funerals, things, sick, whatever, I need to be ready for Sunday morning. So I plan out with it so that I've got an outline, at least an outline and a beginning and an ending. And I got enough swamp water in me. I can talk for 10 minutes on anything. So that's... as to how I am, I will take that in consideration, and maybe next Sunday we change and let it be standing on the, you know, or it might be to, and I want to get this because things are happening in terms of plans being made to deal with IRS that are difficult, but that will be transmitted. It's not to be said anything right now because we're still talking, and I think that's part of the. Within a large church, the people who are talking, and then we'll say, okay, this is where we are. Because if you throw stuff out to everybody, with 1,700 people, and out of those 1,700, 500 that really care, and 300 that really want to say something, it can muddle stuff. And we become a committee of the whole, which is not good. And I do not allow that in a session meeting. Those are questions, and I think that's a piece of really beginning to look at intentional strategies to how do we come together. The church I served in Fernandina on Amelia Island in Florida, and again, God's sense of humor, most wonderful place I've ever lived, except in Athens, Georgia, near my grandchildren. This was before grandchildren, but it was the shortest service I ever had. They had two services. But an issue there was dress, because it is a retirement community, but you had folks who came suit and tie. I mean, you could tell these were executives. But sitting right next to them was another executive that was in his sandals and khaki shorts and Hawaiian print shirt. And I think that there's some sense of what does it mean to worship together, starting with clothes and the music and all of that. How do we do it? Being intentional about what's the purpose of doing this. Again, for everything we try, it's always to ask, why are we doing it? And we don't want to ever get into just because. But we do it, and then we evaluate it. I think this is where churches think that once we start something, it's going to be that way forever. No, let's try this and go for 6 months and look at it. Is it working? Are people enjoying it? Is it accomplishing what we want to accomplish? That's a question I always ask. How do you know you've succeeded? What are the measurements for your success? Most churches do things just... The old song was, well, we need to have a contemporary service because young people, that's what they want. Well, what we find is, no, not all young adults want that. There are a lot of other people who like that, and there are a lot of people who don't like that style of service. So this church has done well in having all of that. Again, I'll say, it's how do we connect those people to say, for the bridge, for 8:30, for 11, this is our church. And I think a lot of what this church's history is, has been, I go back to Doug's question of what makes us who are, is mission. That we know it's mission. I did have, within the first 2 months I was here, and it's very sad. Lady came, a Russian immigrant from Mount Lebanon, needed work on her car. And we didn't have the funds to do that. But I asked, why did you come here, you know, from Mount Lebanon down here? My English as a second language teacher said, Westminster Church is a church that helps. Wow. And this is where, and I will make my confession, I was PO'd at Dave Ryder for that. That made me so angry. But I appreciate what she said. And I think that's part of who this church is and who this church wants to be. How do we help other people? Bob.
Bruce, I want to share a little bit. My experience with you is from the interim pastor nominating, which is a lot easier than the pastor nominating for me, frankly. And many of you may not know that the first time we talked to Bruce, we said, hey, everything in this church is great. You won't have any problems.
I as well.
The second time we called, we had to do a little backpedaling. But I recall your response was, and I'd like you to maybe share that, was, no big deal. I've seen a lot worse. And I think that sometimes we lose perspective and think, you know, my God, things are falling apart. But you've seen a lot more, and actually, I think one of the things we got from you that I didn't anticipate is how important and how professional you are as an interim.
I think Bob's right. I think that was my concern in terms of getting so caught up that within this particular issue that it doesn't define you. This church has had trusting relationships, supportive relationships, and that it my concern is that we begin to become, and they're hints are there, it shows up every once in a while of cynical or suspicious. Hey. I've had better people walk out on me than you. quick story. I was doing a stewardship sermon, and I have no problem talking about money or whatever. And at the end of the sermon, I said something about giving, and it's about money, all this. One of the dearest men in this church and his wife got up and walked out. And behind him was another wonderful leader of the church, followed them out. I thought, oh my God, what have I done? You know, I've lost it. And I walked out and found out he was having a heart situation. And so I followed him immediately to the hospital. But that was my first thought was, oh, gosh. But I think what Bob is saying is that we tend to get caught up and let this get us. And I've been in church. Again, every situation has its own stuff. Some very serious, which this is. Some it's just a matter of we need to make changes, or we're changing, or we're not as we used to be, or we're growing differently. How do we do this? What kind of minister do we need now? Church I served in Greenville, Mississippi, at one time, which is a dying Mississippi Delta town. Used to be a nice small city, 30, 40, 50,000, 30,000 people. Now I'd say they probably got 10 or 15 on the river. It was a destination church in that particular area. 700-800 members. Big city, very, very similar, almost exactly the same sanctuary, except the choir is divided chancel also. But the sanctuary looks the same. But their issue was having to understand their new identity and claim it. They no longer were going to get a 50-year-old minister who wanted to retire. They needed a younger minister, and that was hard. You know, how do we get this? And they did. They found one, or God had called one to them, who really invigorated that church. So that's an issue, and it was claiming that. And I think that's part of what we're about, of looking at how we do things and always asking, and mine is to ask, why do we do it this way? And is it doing what we need it to do? Let's look at that. That's part of it. I this is my football analogy, is that Ed Orgeron, who's a coach of LSU, came in. He changed the culture. You no longer could do your football plan the way LSU had done it forever, which is the old, excuse the use of this word in this chapel, Ohio State way of run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. I know that's not them, but that's just my... He changed. And that's to ask that. What do we need to do? Maybe nothing. Maybe it's good, but be able to evaluate it. I think that's part of what the retreat is going to do. How are we set up? I want for the officer retreat. How are we set? How are we structured to do mission and ministry that is transparent? I would say one thing, I'll put it out here that I want to look at. Again, I think it was the New York Times, maybe the Atlanta, an article about Boeing's board missed the call because they were overboarded. I think that was a title. Their board members were on 2, 3 so different boards. They were not present, and they missed it. And sometimes in churches, we get more than one person, or a person serves on 2, 3 commissions, and we lose the leadership development from other people. Because if you serve on 2 or 3 commissions, you can't make every meeting. You get sidetracked. You focus on one or the other at the expense, or you focus on one at the expense of the other. But allowing people, and this is where this church has a great, I think there's a talent pool here that needs to be tapped, of young adults, and make things available for them to participate so that, how to say it, that it's 20 years from now, Who are going to be your older leaders? And that's the question. Or 20 years from now, and I'm not naming names, 20 years from now, who's going to be you?
I'm far from a biblical scholar, but when I read the Bible between the lines, I think Jesus was a very astute businessman. That's my opinion. If that's correct, how was he different from other astute businessmen, like, say, a Mark Zuckerberg?
One astute businessman, but he did hire Judas as his treasurer. No. I think what Jesus brought to the round table, if you will, to the board table, was a compassion for those who weren't at the table, and a sense of who's not there. His ability to, or his sense of, as one of the stories is, he looked on the crowd with pity, with compassion, that he saw those who weren't there and says, how can we include them? One of the sermons I'm working on for January deals with inequality. How is it there's so many? What does it mean in these days? Looking at my own growing up days when things were not equal. And the board members, the school board members, you're going to hear this in a sermon, probably. My father was superintendent of education, and that's what I'm trying to answer. That my father was superintendent of education in a small parish system, county system, parishes in Louisiana, 63 to 69, and then 69 to 77, a large system in Louisiana. But I got summer jobs working with the school, working, doing manual labor. Middle of the summer, new books and new tables, desks, and all that would come in. So I got the job. I was one of those who worked to unload the new tables and new books to put in a warehouse. Then we went to the African American schools and took all their books and tables out, and they were gotten rid of. Then we went to the white schools and got all their old tables and old books and took them to the African American schools. Then we took the new stuff to the white schools. Jesus would say, that's not good business. That's, I think, the difference there. It might be profitable, but it's not good business because it separates those from the table. It keeps some out. And what, as I said earlier, part of the peace of the Presbyterian Church has been who's in and who's out, not only for ordination, but also by race, by gender, by class, all sorts of things. And I think that's the peace there. There's something there that we've always got to look. Whenever we're doing something, who's not at our table and should be? And I'm not saying that where are the, you know, we got to look at our community, our own sense of where we are. And Bob's helped me with this word of the others. I've heard the thing, this is the most segregated hour in the world. But the issue is, though, we have choices about where we want to go to worship. And this boy, I don't care what, where you go, I'm not going to go sit 3 hours in a worship service. I don't care what color it's getting. I mean, that's just, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go to a Catholic service. But I like this. But it's terms of when we do things and how we involve people, who's at the table? And are we making room for more people? And I think through mission, this is what we do. We look at it in terms of not, I'm trying to think about, what is it? There's always, what does it cost us? But I think the question the church has to ask too, what Jesus did, is, what's it going to cost if I don't do it? And that's a piece that we have to look at to involve other people. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's, I think, compassion and also a sense of justice. The bottom line for Jesus was a person. And it's always, if you will, Matthew 25, 26, the least of these. That's the bottom line. Getting close to the end. My theology professor, Shirley Guthrie, excuse me, you know the story of the sheep and the goats. At the end of the world, they're going to be the sheep on one hand, the goats on the other. And he says, we as Presbyterians, Reformed faith, we're thankful because we know God has offered us salvation. And we're in the sheep line. And he says, you're standing up there, and you're in the sheep line, and the story is, God looks over the sheep, and we go, hey, touch me. Look at me. And then God looks at the goats, and then he looks back at the sheep, and he asks the sheep, why are they over there? Why are they over there? And I think that's part of the compassion. What are we doing to share the good news? It's not just about our programs. It's not just about our worship and its daily life. And I dare say that, as Jason Fryer pointed out in one of his statement about what happened with Dave, it's not just us that were affected. How many people for whom we had compassion were affected by what happened here? That's what hurts the most. That's hard. And so I think this church has that bottom line of compassion, and I hope we can build on it, and that you find that pastor who is doing that, who has that sense of the bottom line is not the balance, and I'm a balanced budget preacher, it's not that the balanced budget has to include that. How do we serve those who have nothing? What are we doing? How are we giving generously? Because I say it in the sermon today, or said it here, you've got the resources. I know it. And it's the old saw. This church has everything it needs, has the money it needs to do whatever. The problem is it's still in your pockets. That's it. So, any other? I don't have to be on board till 11. Five till. I do want to close by saying that I'm open. Literally, my door is open. Mandy knows this. I've tried to maneuver so my computer games are hidden by my chair. No. My door is open, and the phone number's there. I'm willing to talk about anything and listen to anybody with thoughts, with comments, concerns, suggestions, or whatever it may be. But it's a matter of, you know, we're not members of the psychic network. We can't read your mind. We need to hear it. So I'm here. So it's about a quarter till. You tell me. Anything else?